Hello, and thank you for joining us today for this episode of The Dinfos Way, a podcast developed and produced at the Defense Information School. This program is dedicated to developing and showcasing the skills of military communicators, public affairs professionals, and industry experts from all over the world. I'm your host, Jack Rouse. I'm a former Navy and civilian journalist and a current training specialist here at Dinfos. Today, we have the distinct honor of welcoming the Assistant to the Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs, Chris Marr, on the show for a very special episode of The Dinfos Way. The Assistant to the Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs, or ATSDPA, is the Principal Staff Advisor and Assistant to the Secretary of Defense and Deputy Secretary of Defense for Public Information, Internal Information, Community Relations, Information Training, and Audiovisual Matters in support of Department of Defense activities. Essentially, he is the principal spokesperson for all DoD public affairs matters. Prior to the assumption of his duties as the ATSDPA, Mr. Marr began his career as a journalist, working in television and print journalism. He previously worked as the National Press Secretary for Pete Buttigieg's 2020 presidential campaign and joined the United States Department of Transportation as Deputy Director of Public Affairs in February of 2021. Mr. Marr served most recently as White House Deputy Press Secretary. He is our boss's boss's boss, and he joins us today to talk big picture public affairs from a leadership perspective. Mr. Marr, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's really good to be with you.
Well, again, thank you for joining us. The first question I have for you is if you could just tell our audience a little bit about who you are and how you got to where you are today.
Yes, for sure. You covered a good chunk of it. I started out my career as a journalist out in California, originally sports journalism, and then I kind of shifted over to more political journalism. I worked for a small alternative weekly in Santa Barbara, which allowed me to kind of do a little bit of everything and anything that I cooked up with that I could sell to my editors. So it was a pretty fun job. At the right place at the right time sort of situation. The congresswoman who represented Santa Barbara approached me one day and asked me if I would be interested in joining her team as her press secretary, and it was just kind of the right time in my life. I was looking to do something a little different, and so I made the switch over, and that's kind of how I got into the communication side of the business. And since then, up until this gig, mostly had existed in political communications. I worked on the Hill for a few years. I did have a short stint at General Motors, but felt the pull back to politics, and so I went out on the road and worked on several campaigns. I worked on a Colorado Senate race, a Montana Senate race. I worked on a DNC vice chair race. I worked on the Chicago mayor's race, and then for, as you mentioned, on the 2020 presidential campaign for Pete Buttigieg. And then from there, during COVID, I worked for Governor Whitmer, my home state's governor, and then ended up going back to work for Secretary Buttigieg at DOT. And was there only about a month before the press secretary, Jen Psaki, gave me a call at the White House. So made the shift over there and was there for about 2 years and then got the call from the Pentagon and made the move over here.
That's a fascinating journey.
It's tiring when I think about everything, all the moves and different jobs I've had over the last couple, decade or so.
So what does the average day for the ATSDPA look like?
Well, it's one of the reasons I really enjoy the job is, you know, every day is a little bit different. There is kind of a meeting cadence and rhythm often dictated by the secretary's schedule. So I have my intel briefing first thing in the morning at 7:30. I have my internal public affairs meeting at 7:45. And then I'll usually have a meeting with the secretary around 8:30. It's a good opportunity to kind of just see where his head is at for the week, or the day, on a particular issue. A couple times a week, all of the undersecretaries get together, so it's a good kind of round the Pentagon view of things that are happening and things that, you know, me and the folks in my department may or may not be tracking. But good to kind of just get a sense of where the secretary's head is at and that sort of thing. And then it's kind of just off to the races from there. You know, he might have counterpart calls that I listen in on. We gaggle with the press on Mondays. We have press briefings on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So helping out the team as needed to prepare for that and make sure. I don't usually brief, but, you know, Major General Ryder and his Deputy Press Secretary, Sabrina Singh, are the ones going to the podium, but just making sure they're all aligned on what we need. Working through news a day issues that are popping up, working through policy rollouts that may be happening, and then, you know, seeing what else the day brings. Obviously, this moment is a good example. I think, you know, there's a lot of focus on the Middle East, as everyone is well aware, and kind of what's going to be happening and unfolding there. And so, you know, we're doing as much planning on our end as possible to prepare for that in terms of, you know, working with the interagency on who's going to lead the messaging, what the messaging might be, what we want to talk about, what we don't want to talk about, who our, you know, audiences are, and that sort of thing. And a lot of it, because we don't know exactly what's coming, it's hard to prepare, but, you know, we try to prepare as much as we possibly can. So, you know, those types of things are popping up every day. There's always something cooking around the world. And then, you know, being an advisor to the secretary on his public engagements as well. So making sure he has materials he needs to do the interviews that he's sitting down for, mapping out a cadence for him to interact with the Pentagon Press Corps, whether it's via, you know, press conferences or off-the-record engagements, just making sure that he has everything he needs for those types of things. So it's always something different. There's never a dull moment. There's always new challenges. But that's what makes the job exciting, you know?
That's what it sounds like. There's something new every day. And yeah, that's endlessly exciting. What are your major goals as ATS DPA?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for me, as kind of the head of public affairs at in the department, you know, and as a political appointee, who knows, I'm not going to be here forever, and the men and women I'm serving alongside with, many of them will be here a lot longer. Just making sure that I'm an advocate for the public affairs profession in the meetings that I'm in, making sure that public affairs is a part of the strategic discussion from the outset, making sure our senior leaders, whether it's the secretary and the deputy secretary, the undersecretaries, or the combatant commanders, making sure that they all see and understand the value that public affairs brings, that we're not just the guys that you rope in at the end to roll out whatever your announcement you need to make, but strategic thought partners who you should bring into the process early and be a part of those discussions from the very beginning. So I know I'm, you know, I'm a caretaker of this seat. I want to make sure that we're growing public affairs and evolving it to meet today's challenges, but also making sure that the department senior leaders really understand what it is we do and how we do it and how we can do it better.
I'm so glad that you said it that way, because, you know, making sure that leadership knows that we need to be part of the command strategy from the get-go is an incredibly vital part of our role. And you mentioned it just briefly a few seconds ago when you said, you know, we folks are concerned about the Middle East and we're already doing some planning with that. Can you speak at all more a little bit about that? What kind of thinking that we're at this early stage of something where, like you said, it's in a constantly evolving and we don't really know too much about it?
Yeah, I mean, I could broaden it back out a little bit, too. I think, you know, since October 7th, when Hamas attacked Israel, there's been a pretty steady rhythm of news out of the region, to say the least. And I think we realized early on that we just needed to be communicating with CENTCOM and their PA leadership, with other COCOMs that may have equities in what's happening in the Middle East, and others. And so we stood up a daily call at 10:30, just kind of a check-in on what's going on throughout the day, what CENTCOM is tracking, what the Joint Staff PA team is tracking. We have kind of a regular daily cadence that we call just a pretty standard CENTCOM update, where they will download on the activity of the day. Usually involves, shooting down some drones or missiles from the Iran-backed militia groups in the region, as part of the strategy that we have out there. And so we realized that, there's a lot of attention on the region. There's a lot of focus on getting it right. And so we developed kind of a template that allowed us to move quickly on these messages to get them approved, because they go through a pretty rigorous approval process from drafting to, actually getting out the door. And so we try to keep that template every day the same. And that's really streamlined the ability to get the news out the door quickly. So over the course of the last 8 or 9 months, since October 7th, we've sort of slowly kind of put these pieces together to sort of operate more efficiently. So daily communication with CENTCOM, coming up with these press release templates to get quick and easy approval. Other touch points throughout the week, the secretary has a weekly conversation with his counterpart in Israel. So being on those calls and reading them out, there's kind of a cadence to all of this. And as we kind of build up to a potential response from Iran, all of those touch points kind of allow for us to be plugged in and understanding kind of where we're at, where we might be going, so that we can start to put the pieces together on how we're going to respond. A lot of people think this will be similar to the attack on Israel that we helped defend against in April. So we're also using that experience as kind of a guide on how we might respond to whatever happens, in the coming days. So
that's
there's kind of a lot to pull and choose from in terms of how we're starting to put the pieces together, even though we ultimately don't necessarily know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen.
That is absolutely fascinating to hear from a leadership perspective on something like that. Switching gears a little bit, what do you think should the role of the average DoD military communicator be every day? The folks that are out there snapping the pictures and shooting the videos, what should they be concentrating on? What's their role in today's world of modern communication?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's to communicate. I mean, there's not one single answer to that question, I don't think, but it's to communicate to the media, to the American public, to the world, what it is that DoD does day in and day out, to make sure that there's a free flow of information to the public about what it is we're doing, what it is we're doing to improve the lives of our service members, what it is our service members are doing day in and day out, whether it's, here in the Pentagon or serving on a ship in the Mediterranean in the thick of what's going on in the Middle East, I think finding new and different and innovative ways to tell those stories is critically important. And I think not just you know, the news of the day type stuff, but telling the DOD story, who it is who these men and women are who are serving their country. You know, everybody has a unique story to tell. Everybody has a story about why they joined the military. Everybody has challenges that they're facing, or you know, the nice thing about DOD is there's a million stories to tell. There's a lot of cool imagery that go along with those stories, and you know, there's plenty of opportunities out there to just kind of expand how we're talking about DOD and show our mission off to the world.
How do you see kind of that role evolving in the face of all of these new information warfare tactics and the increasing spread of disinformation and misinformation?
Yeah, I think there's two main things, you know, to focus on when we're talking about tackling misinformation and disinformation. And then I think we see it, not to, you know, kind of stay in the Middle East region, but we see it a lot day to day. When these Iran-backed militia groups are pushing out, you know, stories, and they're talking about things that aren't true, or they're alleging things that they're doing that they're not. And I think it requires two things. It requires us to tell the truth and be truthful in our own communications and transparent. And it requires us to be fast. You know, the longer that it takes for us to get into the information space, the more that misinformation is allowed to spread. And we allow others, whether it's adversaries or just uninformed people, to tell our story for us. And so I think in that environment, we need to be moving quickly, but we also need to make sure that we have our own facts straight in sort of passing along that information.
Excellent. Do you think that speed is one of our biggest challenges, or what do you think really are our key challenges as we look ahead the next 5 to 10 years as the information environment just becomes more complex rapidly?
Yeah, I mean, I think speed can be at times, right? And that's why I think it's incumbent on us to get creative in those moments, right? Kind of going back to my earlier point about figuring out beforehand how we can, if we know something's coming, if we know we need to be communicating about it, what can we do beforehand to sort of lay the groundwork to make sure, even if it's a long, arduous approval process, what can we do to speed that up on our end? Speed is certainly one challenge. I think the environment in which we're communicating is another. You know, I think our media is a lot more fragmented. There are places where a lot of, like Twitter, where there's just so much information and a lot of it is pushed by adversaries. A lot of it is pushed by you know, bots, and there's AI creeping in, and a lot of just it's a challenging environment. There's political, you know, leanings that cast things a certain way, and so it's not as simple as just bringing in, you know, the newspapers and the TV stations and telling your story to them and counting on them to get your information out there. There's a lot of places and spaces that we need to be communicating in, and so it's not just speed and accuracy, it's also kind of, you know, a holistic way of communicating as well, making sure that we're operating in the digital spaces. Yes, making sure we're engaging with, you know, legacy media, but also going into places where, you know, maybe we haven't done as good at communicating in the past. So thinking creatively about where and how we're pushing the message. And, you know, this place can move slow in a lot of ways. It can move fast in a lot of ways as well. But I think getting people to understand that the news environment and the way that people receive their information is a lot different than it used to be is a challenge that a lot of us as public affairs professionals are facing.
Oh, 100%. So how can military public affairs practitioners better leverage digital and social media platforms to more effectively communicate, do you think?
I think, making sure that we remain on the cutting edge of things. Part of the problem is they advance so rapidly. One day it's Facebook, and then everybody moves to Twitter, and then it's Instagram, and then it's TikTok, and, you know, right now it's probably something else that I don't even know what it is. And figuring out how to exist in these places and move at speed to make sure that we're communicating in these corners of the internet that, you know, 5-10 years ago might not have even existed, it's challenging to keep up with. I think we need to make sure that we're training our public affairs officers to operate in those places. We need to be experts in the digital field, you know, and understanding what best practices are to ensure that we're achieving those strategic communication objectives there. You know, the world is a lot different than it was 10-15 years ago on the internet even.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to stay at the cutting edge of how people are receiving their information. And it's, you know, it's not something that you just kind of figure out and write a DOTI and put it in policy and then move on. It's something that I think we have to constantly stay on top of and make sure that we're watching and seeing what we can do to do it better.
How important do you think it is for folks in public affairs to try to maybe better coordinate and integrate with other IRC places like CyberFolks, Electronics Warfare, PsyOps, to kind of achieve those strategic communications objectives that we have?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I think, you know, it's something that we're kind of working on here at the OSD level to make sure that we're coordinated and integrated with those folks. I think at the end of the day, you know, our objectives, our goal is perhaps different than theirs. But our goal is to ensure a free flow of news and information to the public and to make sure that's done in a truthful and transparent way. But I think it's also important for the people operating in those spaces to have an understanding of the way that we are communicating and the messages that we're communicating to ensure that we are aligned in those messages, you know, or at least so that they have an understanding of what our objectives are and what our communication is out of here. They're always going to be doing things a little differently. It's probably better that we don't know the ins and outs of that
probably
as public affairs professionals, but I think it's important for them to understand, you know, what is our public affairs guidance on this issue? What is public affairs saying and doing, you know, on this thing that we're looking into and making sure that we're integrated into that process as well.
You know, I'm curious to know at your level, how difficult is it to know your audience and to stay on top of both of what the American people and your enemy, our enemy is thinking as well?
That's a good question. I think you just have to pay attention. You know, you have to pay attention in the meetings that you're attending. There's a lot of useful information that maybe there's not a direct public affairs component to a lot of the meetings that I'm sitting in, but it's the conversations that we're having, you know, help me understand the world in which we're operating better. I think paying attention to social media and the news, I have my TV on all day with all four channels going. I have Twitter up on my computer, even though it drives me crazy, you know,
Thank you for still calling it Twitter, by the way, sir. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. I still get the print newspapers for the Journal and the Post and the Times. It helps me visualize the news in a different way than going to NewYorkTimes.com to see, you know, how their website is laid out. Mm-hmm. To see it in print, kind of what they're prioritizing, you know, where they're putting stories, even in newsprint as it gets old, you know, and stale by the end of the day or by the beginning of the next day. I think it helps me sort of prioritize because I understand what the media is prioritizing, you know. And mm-hmm. then it's constant engagement. I mean, we have a whole team here who there's 25 or so people in our press operations, you know, and they interact with reporters all day. General Ryder and Sabrina interact with reporters all day. I talk to reporters a fair amount, not on all day, every day like they do, but it's important to keep the finger on the pulse to understand where their heads are at, where they might be going. You know, we already have a good idea of what they're going to ask Sabrina tomorrow at the briefing, even though it's a day away, because, you know, we have that finger on the pulse. We have those relationships. We have those conversations with them. So I think it's just kind of being a sponge, I guess, is maybe the easiest way to answer that question.
Excellent. What do you think are some of the most important skills and competencies that junior personnel in our field should work to develop, both officers and enlisted, you know, folks who are maybe in their first tour or just graduating from DINFOS and really wanting to make sure they're prepared the best they can for their future in communications?
Yeah, I'd say two things. I'd say being a good writer goes a long way towards being able to effectively communicate. Obviously, having to do it via press release or on, you know, writing a Twitter post or a LinkedIn post or whatever the case may be, you got to be able to write and communicate thoughtfully and clearly. But even in your own internal communications, you know, whether it's emails to counterparts in other COCOMs or to your boss or to somebody who works for you, you know, the ability to effectively communicate is important. And I think a lot of that has to do with being a good writer. So working on those writing skills, I think, is really important. And then I think, sort of getting to my last point, I think being a good listener is important. Listening to the way that people are communicating, listening to the way that, commanders and those above you are hoping to communicate a message, listening to how adversaries are talking about certain things, really just paying attention to the things people are saying and the way that they're saying it, I think is also really important. And then I think in this day and age, it's easy to over rely on email or text or whatever. And I think just picking up the phone and having a conversation has sort of become a lost art. But people just, whether it's with, you know, people on your own team or reporters or whoever the case may be, and certainly picking up the phone and talking to a reporter is a lot scarier than just sending them an email reply to, you know, whatever they want to talk about. But it helps you build those skills. It helps you become used to having those conversations and figuring out how to navigate those conversations. But I think it just allows you to become a better communicator, to pick up the phone, have the conversation. It's going to help you build relationships quicker, and I think ultimately become a better communicator overall. So those are the three.
That's perfect. That's almost exactly what we tell our students, sir. So if you ever need a job, we've got an instructor position here for you.
All right, great.
How can we best sort of incorporate emerging technologies into what we do? You know, we've got artificial intelligence and augmented reality and other kinds of immersive media in our toolbox now. Sort of how do you think we can best utilize those for good instead of evil?
Yeah. But I think it's top of mind. It's certainly top of mind for PA professionals. You know, I go when I travel and meet with PA folks, that's one of the top questions that I get. And I think it's one thing that we're kind of working here, working through here with, here in OSD, on the joint staff, with the services, just in the PA world, you know, how to use these emerging technologies, how to use them appropriately. I think there are a lot of benefits to it. It could help speed up work. It could help us probably communicate more clearly, you know, that sort of thing. But I don't think we should ever get in the habit of, you know, typing something into ChatGPT, printing out the piece of paper and then shipping it out to the American public. You know, there has to be some measures in there that kind of safeguard that process and making sure that there's a human element to it and both for accuracy, but also for making sure that the product that we're sending out is reliable and effective and appropriate. So I don't have a good answer for you. I'd say that the answer to that question is a work in progress. Mm-hmm. On a whole scope of emerging technologies and how we might be using them going forward.
I'm fascinated with your time with Secretary Buttigieg at DOT, and I know that a lot of stuff happened while he was with the Department of Transportation, and I was wondering if there was anything sort of best practices with crisis communications that came up during that time, or messaging, or reputation management, or anything that you could tell me that was sort of best practices you learned during that time period.
So I wasn't really at DOT with Secretary Buttigieg long enough to really be involved in a lot of the stuff that they were hit with over the last few years. I was only there for right around a month, actually.
Oh, okay.
And it was at the very beginning of the administration, and so we were kind of still setting up our teams and getting things going, and then I was out the door. but one thing I can tell you about Pete, and this goes back to his campaign a little bit as well, and I'm not going to get political, but as a presidential candidate, I mean, anybody who's seen him knows he's a very effective communicator, it made my job really easy, frankly. It made me look good over and over, even if I didn't do a whole lot. But I think one thing that I learned from his campaign and one thing that I learned from my short time at DOD is if you have a good communicator, if you have an effective communicator like Secretary Buttigieg, then you should be pedal to the metal in using that. You know, he didn't rise from the mayor of the fourth largest city in Indiana to a top-tier presidential candidate just by luck. It was because he was gifted and we put him in situations where he could thrive. And we had this sort of go-anywhere approach to make sure that we were reaching anywhere and everywhere to get his message out during the presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. We brought that sort of ethos to DOT right out of the gate. You know, kind of going back to some of what I was saying earlier, we sat down and said, you know, okay, yeah, we got to talk to ABC and we got to talk to, you know, Reuters and kind of the legacy media crew who covers DOT and transportation issues. But like, who could we talk to that maybe previous transportation secretaries haven't talked to? And so the first day that we did press, we did some of those kind of legacy media types, but we also sat down with the points guy, you know, who I don't even know a whole lot about, but, you know, the website that he kind of does travel hacks and, you know, how to get the best, you know, deals for the travel points that you have from your credit cards, right? Just somebody who's in the transportation world, who's in the travel world, who has a huge following, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, but probably an audience who has never heard from a Secretary of Transportation, you know, mm-hmm. or never heard certainly even from a government official. And making sure that we're not just showing up on CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and New York Times, but going to places where people who don't spend all day watching cable news exist, you know, and thinking creatively about that. And he's done that consistently, both in his time that I was with him and subsequent to that. So it helps when you have a very effective communicator like him who can sort of pivot around to all of these, you know, different and unique environments. But if you have somebody like that and you have somebody who's willing to do it, get creative about what you're doing and how you're doing it.
I want to touch on something that you mentioned there during your answer, only because it's something that we get asked by students now about all the time, which is that obviously we live now in an era of, let's say, hyper-partisanship. How can military public affairs professionals maintain objectivity and credibility when they're communicating sensitive or controversial information?
You know, having operated in the political environment for so long, and not having a national security sort of background, moving over to the Pentagon was a huge shift for me, to say the least. And I wasn't really sure whether I would like it or not, just because it was something that was so new and so different, and a world that I just didn't understand. And what I've actually found is I like it so much more than I did my previous life. And a big reason for that is because the people that I work with day in and day out are here to serve their country, and they swore an oath to the Constitution. They're not here because President Biden is president, or because Donald Trump was president, or Obama before that, or Bush before that. Mm-hmm. They're here because they love their country and they want to serve. And I think so. Part of it is an easy answer to just remember why you're doing what it is you're doing. And the other thing is, you know, there's a lot of noise out there. There's especially a lot of noise right now in the political spaces. We're 90 days away from the election, you know. And so I think it's more critical than ever that we keep our head down. We remain focused on the mission at hand. There's a lot of important work going on throughout the department. On life or death issues. You know, what's going on in the Middle East is critically important. I mean, we're talking about the potential for a regional war breaking out. You know, Russia, Ukraine, there's been a war for the last 2 years, and that has implications for the rules-based international order, you know. The work that we're doing globally has implications, very important implications, and I think it's really key that we remain focused on what it is we're doing, why it is we're doing it, and to tune out the noise from wherever it comes. And remember why you're doing this. A lot of, you know, there's been a lot of efforts by members of Congress and elected officials and politicians to politicize the military in a lot of ways. And you just have to tune out that noise and focus on what the mission is. You know, you also have to have some awareness, again, of those conversations, because they are relevant to your job. Being aware that they're out there, understanding that they are potholes that you could fall into if you're not careful. So having that awareness, but realizing that at the end of the day, you're here to focus on the mission, to do what's right, and to effectively communicate about what it is we're trying to do as the Department of Defense.
So this has been a fascinating conversation so far. I only have a couple of questions left for you. I don't want to take up your entire day, but my first, second to last question, I guess, would be any last advice that you would want to give towards young communicators or really anybody in the field who maybe aspires to be in a position like yours one day, or again, just to be a better communicator?
I would say, you know, just continue to think outside the box, to think creatively. What you're learning at DINFOS is sort of the cornerstone of how to operate as a communications professional and a public affairs professional. But then it's up to you to take that sort of basing in what you know and how you know to do it, and expand and grow and, you know, really take it and run with it, and think creatively about how we're communicating our messages. Think beyond the press release, you know. Yes, press releases are important for conveying information, but there are other ways of doing it too. You know, a photo sends a message. Social media conveys a message to specific audiences. You know, be thinking about who your audience is, what your message is, how you want to communicate that message to the audience, and where is most appropriate to execute that. And don't be afraid of thinking outside the box. Just because it's been done a certain way for the last 20 or 30 years doesn't mean that it's got to be done that way today or tomorrow or the next day. So, you know, I think the more creativity we can bring while staying rooted in kind of what you're learning at DINFOS and teaching them at DINFOS, that combination is critically important as we head into the future.
Very well said, sir. Thank you. Appreciate that. Possibly the most important question that I have to ask you this entire interview, you mentioned at the very beginning that you started out as a sports writer. Who is your baseball team, sir?
Well, that's an easy one. That's the Detroit Tigers.
Oh, okay.
I'm from Metro Detroit. Grew up a Tigers fan. Had a lot of ups and downs over the course of my life. And no World Series champions since 1984. So we got some work to do still.
You beat the Orioles by 1 year. Our last one was 1983. So I feel your pain.
All right, we're doing a little better then.
1 year better, exactly. Well, I think.
Thanks for making me feel better about that.
No problem. That's what we're here for. Sir, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an absolutely wonderful conversation. Is there anything you want to add, maybe that I forgot to ask you, or just anything else you wanted to talk about before I let you go?
No, I think that's good.
Again, thank you so much for your time, sir. We really appreciate you coming on the show. Whenever you want to come back on, we will always make time for you.
All right. I really appreciate you having me.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks, Jack.